Potstir Podcast, where politics, religion, and history collide, and it's not always polite.
When I was in college, my father started having major health problems. The ones I was most aware of at the time were vertigo and loss of vision. Over the next few years, I saw my dad, who was a third-degree black belt in Isshinryu Karate, had traveled overseas, had so many diverse experiences, and knew so many people. My mentor, my role model, and who was the closest person to me in the entire world, steadily decline and become weak. That's the best way I can put it. It was so hard to watch. I remember him worrying about a lot of things, but fighting to at least appear independent. He had a family to support, and he had good health insurance, but if he couldn't see, would he lose his job? And if he lost his job, he wouldn't be able to support his family, and he would lose his health insurance. And without that, how would he get the care he needed to at least have a shot at not completely losing his vision or figuring out why he couldn't be steady on his feet? He worried about that until the day he died, 11 years ago. I was diagnosed with glaucoma last year in my mid-30s, not long after obtaining health care coverage due to the employer mandate in the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare or the ACA. I was pretty healthy before my diagnosis. I was advised by my doctor that my condition was not driven by lifestyle, nor could it be changed by it. It was most likely genetic, especially at my age. Being diagnosed gave me flashbacks of my dad's illness and everything he went through, but A, it was a good thing Chuckles and I had health insurance. We could not have afforded health insurance otherwise because of pre-existing conditions. Insurance companies consider pretty much anything to be a pre-existing condition, even the asthma that was only triggered by colds. It was a high-deductible plan, so we had to pay thousands of dollars before substantial coverage kicked in. But even then, if it weren't for the ACA, we wouldn't be covered at all, and I may not have been able to afford medications and surgeries needed to keep me from going blind. There are other families in the United States who are in a similar situation, and many face even worse consequences if healthcare coverage isn't available and affordable to them. You see, folks, healthcare is not a luxury. This is not like the latest 70-inch 4K TV or brand new 5,000-square-foot home with open-concept kitchen and granite countertops. You work hard for a new car, latest fashions, bigger boat, fancier house. You shouldn't have to work hard to afford healthcare. Because healthcare is not a luxury. It's a necessity for many Americans. It's a matter of life and death. And you may not know how important it is until your own life flashes before your eyes, or you find yourself close to losing a loved one. There, but for the grace of God, go I. I am your host, Jay Poole. On Thursday, after several failed attempts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Donald Trump announced an end to federal subsidies to insurance companies that help to lower insurance costs for lower and middle-income Americans. He also signed an executive order permitting the selling of association health plans and short-term health plans, both of which allow the proliferation of cheaper plans with less coverage, which means that sicker Americans and Americans with pre-existing conditions will end up paying even higher rates. Both developments mean that insurance premiums will likely spike on those who can afford it least. These are ways in which Trump is attempting to destroy the ACA on his own, since the GOP couldn't do it for him. And this may be an attempt to force Democrats and wayward Republicans to go along with one of the egregious versions of Trump care that shift billions of dollars from those who need it most to those who need it least. Meanwhile, Puerto Rico is still devastated by Hurricane Maria, which hit last month after the U.S. territory was still recovering from Hurricane Irma. Many residents do not have electricity or safe running water. As of this recording, the death toll according to the federal government is 48, but independent observers estimate the death toll at upwards of 450 people and potentially climbing. We'll get back to that discrepancy in a moment. People are still actively dying in our country from a storm that happened weeks ago. And how is Trump reacting to Puerto Rico and the devastating loss of American lives? Trump has attacked the mayor of San Juan, Carmen Yulín Cruz, who has begged for help for her residents and has been out in the floodwaters and devastation. Trump has blamed Puerto Rico's debt, which is not unique for an American state or territory to have, since many states, including Nevada, which he praised unconditionally, have debt, and some of which Trump himself has contributed to due to a failed business venture on the island he never paid for. And without a hint of irony, Trump has accused Puerto Rico's territorial government of being corrupt. On September 30th, Trump tweeted,
"The mayor of San Juan, who was very complimentary only a few days ago, has now been told by the Democrats that you must be nasty to Trump. Such poor leadership ability by the mayor of San Juan and others in Puerto Rico who are not able to get their workers to help. They want everything to be done for them when it should be a community effort. 10,000 federal workers now on island doing a fantastic job."
He went on to say,
"The fake news networks are working overtime in Puerto Rico doing their best to take the spirit away from our soldiers and first ours. Shame. Despite the fake news media in conjunction with the Dems, an amazing job is being done in Puerto Rico. Great people. Results of recovery efforts will speak much louder than complaints by San Juan Mayor. Doing everything we can to help great people of Puerto Rico."
The next day,
"We have done a great job with the almost impossible situation in Puerto Rico. Outside of the fake news or politically motivated ingrates."
Then on October 8th,
"Nobody could have done what I've done for Puerto Rico with so little appreciation, so much work."
Then just this past Thursday,
"We cannot keep FEMA, the military, and the first responders, who have been amazing, under the most difficult circumstances in Puerto Rico forever."
Compare Trump's tweets on Houston after Hurricane Harvey.
"After witnessing firsthand the horror and devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey, my heart goes out even more so to the great people of Texas. Churches in Texas should be entitled to reimbursement from FEMA relief funds for helping victims of Hurricane Harvey, just like others."
And Hurricane Irma in Florida.
"The U.S. Coast Guard, FEMA, and all federal and state brave people are ready. Here comes Irma. God bless everyone. With Irma and Harvey devastation, tax cuts and tax reform is needed more than ever before. Go, Congress, go. The devastation left by Hurricane Irma was far greater, at least in certain locations, than anyone thought, but amazing people working hard."
And his tweets on a Las Vegas mass shooting.
"My warmest condolences and sympathies to the victims and families of the terrible Las Vegas shooting. God bless you. It is a miracle how fast the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police were able to find the demented shooter and stop him from even more killing. On behalf of a grateful nation, thank you to all of the first responders, heroes, who saved countless lives in Las Vegas on Sunday night. Happy to announce we are awarding $1 million to Las Vegas in order to help local law enforcement working overtime to respond to last Sunday's tragedy."
Trump promised to make America great again, to put America first. Upwards of 450 Americans and counting are dead due to a natural disaster here in America, and Trump calls Americans who are looking for help nasty and ingrates, since they don't kiss his ring. He has trotted out racist tropes to rip into Puerto Ricans, like they want everything to be done for them, while stating that Floridians are amazing people working hard. Trump is offering cut-rate plans to Americans in the name of undermining the accomplishments of his predecessor and cutting funding from Americans who need affordable, quality health care the most. Which America was Trump really talking about when he said he would make America great again? Pot Stirrer Podcast will be back after this. Did you know for today's episode? Last weekend, Vice President Mike Pence walked out of an NFL football game between the Indianapolis Colts and the San Francisco 49ers. He stated it was because a few of the players were kneeling during the national anthem in protest of unpunished police brutality that disproportionately affects Black Americans. Although reports state Pence had been scheduled to leave early from the game, Donald Trump actively pushed the story that he made Pence leave the game if any players kneeled, and framing their peaceful protest as being about hatred for America, the flag, and the military rather than about what it was, the sanctioned killing of unarmed or legally armed Black Americans by police without due process of law. Trump has repeatedly attacked NFL players who kneel, threatening their livelihoods, and trying to browbeat owners to force them to stand for the anthem. He has also attacked NBA players who have spoken out against him, such as LeBron James and Stephen Curry. The Golden State Warriors were planning not to attend a visit to the White House, an annual event held by the president to congratulate the team who wins the NBA championship, when Trump decided to attack them and state they were disinvited. The Pittsburgh Penguins, who won the Stanley Cup, announced they were visiting the White House a day later. When the Penguins visited, Trump stated to the group of hockey players in attendance, "You are true, true champions and incredible patriots." Despite the fact that most of the Penguins are not from the United States, most are from Canada and Europe. The battles between Trump and predominantly Black players in the NFL and NBA have shades of the story of Jesse Owens, an American sprinter and alum of The Ohio State University who competed in the 1936 Summer Olympics, which were held in Nazi Germany. Most people have heard the story that Adolf Hitler was thrilled to host the games to show the physical superiority of the Aryan race, the fair-haired, light-eyed Germanic white race, over other races and ethnicities. Owens, who was Black, dashed Hitler's aims by dominating the track and field events. The story goes that Hitler snubbed Owens even though he congratulated white athletes who won events during the Olympic Games. But did you know that Hitler was not the only leader that snubbed Owens? Before we get into the other snub, there's actually more to the Hitler story than the one that is often repeated. According to Jeremy Schaff, author of the book Triumph, The Untold Story of Jesse Owens and Hitler's Olympics, during the first day of the Olympics, he personally congratulated two Germans who won gold medals and three Finns who swept the 10,000-meter track event. Cornelius Johnson, an American who won gold in the high jump event the same night, was not congratulated as Hitler had left the building by that time. Hitler's staff state that he was strictly adhering to his schedule. The high jump competition had run over time, but the head of the International Olympic Committee, or IOC, felt that it gave the appearance that Johnson was snubbed by Hitler because he was Black. So the IOC head told Hitler that he had to congratulate all the winners or none at all. So Hitler, still trying to get in good with international authority figures, chose the latter and did not congratulate any other winners during the games. Jesse Owens goes on to win four gold medals at the 1936 Olympics. For the rest of his life, he refuted the story that Hitler snubbed him. But he did point out who did. The person who snubbed him was President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Civil rights groups such as the NAACP were urging Black athletes to boycott the 1936 Olympics because they found it problematic to lend legitimacy to the racist Nazi regime after the poor treatment they received by racist whites in the United States. Black athletes, including Owens, did end up participating after Avery Brundage, the head of the American Olympic Committee, branded those calling for a boycott un-American agitators. Sound familiar? After Owens' amazing showing at the Olympics, Roosevelt did not acknowledge Owens' victories, nor send him a congratulatory telegram, and he was not invited to the White House to meet the president either, even though less decorated white Olympic athletes were invited and had a chance to meet the president. Now, returning to Trump and his war on NFL and NBA athletes, Zach Beauchamp, from Vox frames this perfectly. Calling an all-white assembly of mostly foreign hockey players patriots, in clear contrast to the group of African-American athletes that the president has blasted, suggests the real issue here isn't love for America. It's how well the athletes fit into Trump's vision of America, one in which black athletes shut up about racism and perform the sort of patriotic spectacle that Trump likes. Trump's approach to politics is often labeled nationalism. That's right, to a degree, but imprecise. Trump's actual view appears much closer to ethno-nationalism. Certain groups of people qualify as true Americans, while others who don't fit the mold aren't entitled to the same rights and level of concern. Ultimately, some people matter more than others, which is how white foreigners are incredible patriots, while black Americans asking to be treated equally get labeled sons of bitches. Everything old is new again. Now back to Pot Stirrer Podcast. From 1917 through 1991, Russia was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, or the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union did not have legally independent news, they had the state news. While many democracies, including the United States, have some state-funded media, the Soviet Union only had the state media, and they used their state press to control what Soviet citizens knew. They would release news that would paint the Communist Party and the General Secretary, General Secretary was usually considered the leader of the Soviet Union, in a positive light, and either bury any negative news or spin it to scapegoat vulnerable groups. The first five-year plan was an economic plan executed by Joseph Stalin between 1928 and 1932 to build up the Soviet Union's agriculture and infrastructure to modern standards. Part of the five-year plan was a policy of collectivization, which was that the Soviet Union would seize privately owned farms, had peasant farmers till the land, and the yield was then provided to the state. The first five-year plan was reported on as finishing ahead of schedule, which it was. What wasn't reported on were the shortcuts taken to get there and poor quality of the goods being produced as a result of the five-year plan. The Great Famine, which occurred between 1932 and 1933 at the conclusion of the first five-year plan, killed what was estimated as between 2.4 and 7.5 million people, though the exact number is unknown due to the lack of records, and this estimate does not include the millions that died in Ukraine during this time. Soviets were aware of the Great Famine, but Stalin's regime framed this humanitarian crisis as the fault of the peasants who resisted being part of collectivized farms, rather than as a result of the five-year plan and the policy of collectivization itself. Even though the Soviet Union no longer exists, Vladimir Putin's Russia is not a functioning democracy and continues to lack freedom of the press. The Russian press gives daily reports about how awesome Putin is doing, as LGBT Russians, racial and ethnic minorities, and dissident journalists are targeted by the state. Russia is just as unfree and undemocratic as it was during the days of the USSR, just without the communism. Lügenpresse is a German word that translates to lying press, very similar to Trump's often-used slogan, fake news, that has been used during various times in Germany's history to discredit the news media. Lügenpresse was first used as a relatively benign descriptor for enemy propaganda during the First World War, but later took on charged connotations. During the rise of Nazism, it denoted hatred for journalists and others critical of the Nazi regime, as well as Jewish people and communists. Lügenpresse was later used by the communist East German government during the Cold War to refer to the West, including the United States. In recent years, it has been used as a now-banned slur against journalists by Germany's anti-Islam movement. just in the month of October, and we're only halfway through. Donald Trump has tweeted out the phrase fake news or referred to the media as fake in his tweets 27 times. This is solely referring to media outlets that release negative stories about him. In comparison, Las Vegas has come up 13 times. Puerto Rico has only been stated 10 times, and mainly in reference to how great a job Trump wants to tell Americans he's doing in attacking Puerto Rico's leaders as Americans on the island are actively dying. I mentioned earlier how I would come back to the discrepancy between the government numbers and independent estimates of the numbers of dead Americans in Puerto Rico due to Hurricane Maria and its aftermath. Think about when you hear on the news about a natural disaster, terror attack, attack by the state, or other tragedy that involves loss of life in a foreign country. Depending on the country, we'll hear huge discrepancies between government death tolls and independent observer death tolls. And generally speaking, this happens in countries with authoritarian leadership, and it happens with failed states. Folks, this is happening here in the United States of America. The Fourth Estate is vital to a functioning democracy. An independent, free press is important because it keeps the public informed and the government accountable. Knowledge is power. The stripping of democracy almost always includes attacks on the credibility of the free press. The idea that even as the leader does horrible, evil things, like throw paper towels into a crowd and let 450 citizens and counting die on your watch because you're butthurt that a mayor made you look bad, or let a healthcare program lapse for 9 million poor children and children with special needs, or take away money to help citizens pay for healthcare they otherwise could not afford while lying about the move, making things better for them, or threaten the livelihoods of private citizens who peacefully protest the extrajudicial killing of American citizens by the state without due process, whether on the streets or at the stadium on any given Sunday. That even if the press reports on it, no one will believe what is happening right in front of their faces because the leader has repeatedly told us that the press is lying to us. That is what makes what Trump is doing both dangerous and evil. Speaking of dangerous and evil, as Trump has decided to let Americans die because they aren't of any worth to him politically or economically, he went to the Values Voter Summit on Friday to a cheering conservative evangelical crowd as the first sitting U.S. president to address the group. As this man has shown no concern for the lives of lower and middle class Americans who need health care, including children, or Americans dying in Puerto Rico, these conservative evangelicals cheered as he said, "How times have changed, but you know what? Now they are changing back again. Just remember that." He threw them a bone with the statement, "We're saying Merry Christmas again." And the conservative evangelicals were whipped into a frenzy at the prospect of a Merry Christmas devoid of Christ. Check out our website today, PotSwearerPodcast.com, for previous episodes, special presentations, announcements, merch, and all things PotSwearer Podcast. You can find our show on iTunes, Google Play, and most other podcatchers. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, give us 5 stars, leave a review, share, and tell your friends. Thank you for listening and supporting PotStirrer Podcast. I'm Jay Poole. Let's fight for America's future, because freedom is not free.